Welcome in. My name is Simone Mercer-Huggins. I am an investor and trader, and so far I've built over seven figures from the ground up, and now this community is doing the same. The Ms. Wealthy movement is here to share tools, resources, strategies, and support on all things financial freedom. Tune in for everything money, investing, mindset, trading, and everything in between. If you want to be a powerful player in the wealth creation game, you're in the right place. So, welcome to the Kiss My Money podcast. I am so beyond excited to share this interview with you. I first discovered RRT, which stands for Rapid Resolution Therapy, in 2020 when my coach at the time, Andrea Crowder, introduced me to it. And when I first started sort of understanding what it was about, I got really excited because my kink is exploring the brain and the mind and how it works from a scientific level. See, I had done years of different therapies. I'd done years of talk therapy, and whilst I truly do believe that CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, or ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, and EMDR, and a whole bunch of other stuff, other methodologies do have their place, what I don't agree with is this idea that you have to spend years and years and years rewiring essentially the brain. So when I discovered RRT is fast, effortless, painless, it really intrigued me. But at the time, I had a belief that I will always be working on the issues that hold me back, and I always will have the belief there is something holding me back, which was like a double-edged sword. So I had done everything. I'd done, you know, like I said, talk therapy to deep spiritual practices. I'd done ayahuasca ceremonies. I'd done almost every modality that you could think of. So because I saw the incredible effects from the beginning, I trained to become certified in 2021 and started using this with clients pretty much since then in 2021. So I recorded this episode with John in 22, but because I took kind of about a year off to have my little cherub, Evie, this is sort of like 18 months later. Re-listening to it this week, it's like not even a day has passed. There is also another resource that I want to share with you, and that program is called Carte Blanche. And I've named it that because it is essentially about wiping the slate clean on your money and wealth beliefs. I want RRT and Carte Blanche to be the program that you can finally go, oh my God, thank God that I found this. So in the show notes will be all of those resources for RRT and also the link to sign up to the waitlist for Carte Blanche. Okay, let's jump straight in. You're gonna love it. Thank you so much for being here on the Kiss My Money podcast. Now, for all the listeners that are tuning in, I've spoken about RRT before. I've taken John's certification in RRT after I'd done some of John's Monday night solution sessions, which I will link in the show notes and talk about more because they're fantastic. I've also had a private session with John on a couple of different things. And I'm just so excited to have you on here because I could listen to you for hours. Well, I have listened to you for hours in the RRT training. Your perspectives have really shifted so much, particularly around money and wealth and finance. But it doesn't really matter what the topic is. It's just that your methodology releases so much stuckness, overwhelm, which I know a lot of people do have around money. It's so effective. I mean, some of the things that can happen in one session are things that from personal experience, but also that I've seen, are things that people have struggled with for years, and it can be cleared in a session.
I know it seems flippant and ridiculous to say, but it's like you're a wizard, or it's like magic.
Oh, that's so kind.
So thank you for coming on. I want to hear just a little bit about you and how you would sum up RRT for the listeners.
Wow, Simone, you went and made me feel good with all those compliments. Holy smokes. have to rein me in. I know a whole lot of stuff about how to help people's minds work and how to cause them to work better. So if there's a fear, you know, to me, it's a fear just like any other fear.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know about how you untangle fears and why they happen, why they work and what have you. What happened is I got out of college. I'm going to whine and moan about my history for a little bit. I got out of college and I had a degree in history. And I didn't know what I was supposed to do with that, but I started looking in the newspaper want ads, and they didn't have any desire to have bachelor's level historians. So I thought, well, you know, what am I supposed to do? And I started looking for jobs, and all of them required some kind of skill. And I had completed college, but I didn't think I had any skill, and there wasn't anything I could do. And I called my grandfather and I said, "Granddad, I've completed college. What do I do?" And he said, "Well, when you were in college, what did you do?" I said, "Wrote papers and take tests." He said, "Did you do okay on tests?" I said, "Enough to graduate." He said, "Go to this place and take tests." So I went to this place where they hire, where they test for civil service government positions.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started taking tests. And then I got a phone call and they gave me a job.
Okay.
And the job was, I became a child protective service worker.
Wow.
Which meant if there were allegations of abuse or neglect to children, I'm supposed to go out and take care of that.
Wow.
Which I thought, how am I supposed to do this? What do I know about this? I have a degree in history and there's nothing I can do. And now I'm supposed to go out and do like counseling and interventions and deal with incredibly difficult situations. And if I don't do a good job, kids are going to get beaten or killed. I what do I have? A degree in history. So what the heck am I supposed to do with that? Anyway, I did that for a number of years and realized that primarily our job was to create the illusion that children were being protected because there wasn't the staff or the expertise to actually do it. And from there, I moved into being in a program that was designed to work with runaway, throwaway teens. And I did what I could there and started doing some college teaching and whatever. I went to graduate school during this whole thing in order to learn how to be a psychotherapist or counselor.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
They don't teach you anything there. And people started coming to me because then I opened a private practice. People would come in and they would talk about this thing or that trauma that's going on. And I called my buddy and I said, "Oh my God, you got to help me. I think I slept through the classes on how you're supposed to help people with these issues."
Right.
He said, "No, I don't think you slept through them." And I said, "Well, I don't even have any notes. I can't find it." He said, "There weren't any." So I said, "Oh, I better go to postdoctoral programs." So now I started taking more and more studies, going to postdoctoral programs. And I met a teacher and she made sense to me. She said, "The reason people are having problems, Simone, is that they have repressed feelings stuck inside them from events that happened where they didn't have an opportunity to express all their feelings. So if you're getting mugged, you're probably focused on how to stay alive mm-hmm. rather than how to emote and effectively."
Right.
So I said, "Oh, that makes sense. So how do I help?" And they said, "Well, you got to get people to release their feelings." And I said, "How do I do that?" And she said, "Well, you know, tell them that they're in a safe place. And then try to get them to re-experience the worst moments of their lives." I said, "Excuse me? What do you mean?" "Well, like if a gal was raped, she should feel like she's getting raped when she's with you, huh?" "Well, she has to do that. Why?"
Mm-hmm.
"So that she can feel awful and express it so that she can release it. So I bought into this, I'm embarrassed to tell you, and believed from what I learned that there were pockets of emotion stuck inside people. And my job was to kind of find them, cut them open, squeeze out the emotion and get people better. It was awful. It was painful. It was awful. People are sobbing. I'm sobbing. They told us, you know, you don't just need Kleenex. You should have buckets because if you're going to do a really good job, people need to vomit. And I thought, oh, what? But I screwed. I didn't do a good job protecting the children or the teenagers. So this is my punishment. I have to deal with these people that have had these issues. And even though I didn't like it, I did it and did it and did it until I realized it doesn't work, which didn't take long. I mean, if it made me feel awful and her feel awful, I was going to do it anyway. If it worked, and it didn't work. And I realized, gosh, sometimes people get better as when they do this kind of thing, but I think it's in spite of it.
Yeah.
Because of it. So I realized nothing I learned really applied to how to effectively make people better. I also noticed that therapists who don't make people better explain that based on the people didn't really want to get better. And that's called resistance, or the person isn't ready to change.
Right.
And I thought, so they're just kind of fooling around with me, right? They come in and say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to come and see that guy, give him a whole bunch of money and not get better. That'll screw him up.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they do that? What do you mean they're not ready to change? Why would they see me? Why would they pay me? Why would they be interested? I started to realize if people aren't getting better, it's my fault.
Right.
I mean, they're showing up and they're paying me. If they're not getting better, that's because I don't have the skill. And so I began to rethink the whole thing from ground up, came up with a whole other system, which was basically the opposite of everything I learned. And then I started doing that, and it was fun, and people were laughing instead of crying, and they got better. And then people said, this is pretty interesting. Why don't you teach other people who would like to assist people how to do it the way you came up with? And that's what I started doing. And that's how you and I then met, and how you became a prize pupil. because you said, yeah, I want to learn what to do to actually make people, to get people past emotional turmoil and pain, to get people to eliminate, if not at least reduce dramatically, the suffering that they're going through. And the good news is that we can actually make a very significant difference in a short period of time. I don't know whether you wanted me to tell you my whole life story, but now you're stuck with it.
I really love the development to get to that point, because obviously I have come to learn a different perspective and a different way of thinking around how to shift the mind and how to clear unstuckness and how to create transformation. And I will tell you, I really bought into a lot of the stuff that you see, particularly in the spiritual world. You might not be so much in it, but they do talk about resistance and stuck energy and feelings in the body. And it has to be, you know, the feeling has to be released and you have to feel it to heal it.
So very similar.
Right. Very similar to it takes 7 years.
Very painful.
So painful. And you have to journal for 5 hours and you have to do affirmations and mantras and meditate. And I became very disillusioned by following a lot of this, and to some degree even believed quite deeply that that was the way, until I started to learn the RRT way. And even when I first heard you say forgiveness isn't necessary, I was always angry at you. I was like, of course it is. You have to self-love.
You were that pretty angry gal in the audience who was throwing stuff at me. That's such a sacred principle.
So sacred.
That it's all about forgiveness. But my thought on forgiveness is, if I'm going to forgive you, the first thing I have to do is get it that you were wrong and did things you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. The second thing I got to do is feel that I'm on a sort of a higher level
right.
than you, where I have the ability to forgive you. Mm. I forgive you. That's sort of arrogant. It's hard for people to do, and it's kind of arrogant even if you do it. Mm. So maybe there are other ways to get clear and free than the way that we've been taught. I started thinking about what goes on that causes emotion and what goes on that causes thought. We meet so many people who tell us that their emotions are hurting them, that they're experiencing some kind of anxiety, depression, jealousy, grief, guilt, shame, all these kinds of emotional turmoil. So here's what I think about that. The way that people usually think is that you understand what he's feeling based on his environment. So I say, why is that guy so angry? And somebody says, well, because that other guy just shoved him. So we understand the feeling based on the environment. I don't have an argument with that, but it's not useful to me. Mm-hmm. It was useful in the beginning of my career when I was a child protective service worker. So if I saw a two-year-old that was getting physically abused, I didn't think, well, I have to talk with that two-year-old and help change her perspective. I have to either get the environment better where she is, or I have to get her out of it.
Yeah.
But if I'm talking to you and you're troubled by something, I don't have the luxury of just taking you out of your environment.
Right.
So what do I do? Then I want to work with you within your environment, but changing the way you are responding to it. Mm-hmm. So to do that, I think about having an effect on that individual's mind. By mind, what I mean is that thing that is unconsciously processing information, creating information, responding to information. That's what I mean by mind. It's an information processor and responder. And I think the prime directive for the mind is to cause one to survive and then possibly thrive. Mm-hmm. So you want to survive and thrive, but I can tell about you, you're not okay with just you surviving and thriving. So the whole reason you do this podcast and meet with the people you do and do the things you do is because you have this strong passion for others to thrive.
Right.
So that's what our mind is looking to do, to cause us and people we care about to survive and thrive. In order to do that, it has to do two different kinds of things. One is it has to cause internal things to happen. Digestion, respiration, circulation. I don't know much about how it does that, but I think it's chemical, electrical impulses making all that work. But then the mind also has to do external things. It not only has to get Bob's stomach to digest, it has to get Bob to go in the kitchen, make a sandwich and eat it.
Right.
So how does our mind cause us to do things? It causes emotion. It causes sensation. It causes thought. It causes impulse. It causes habit. And with those things, it can cause all kinds of things to happen. Our minds are much more advanced than any other life form. I mean, think of London. Think of Los Angeles.
Right.
I mean, no other life form could figure out how to build London or Los Angeles or this huge plane to bring people back and forth from London to Los Angeles. No other life form can do what we can do. Mm-hmm. Our minds became much more advanced, but unfortunately with that much more dysfunctional. Humans are experiencing depression and emotional turmoil and all kinds of things significantly more than zebras, camels, monkeys. Our mind more advanced, but dysfunctional, causing havoc. And I tell people, if you if you need a reminder that people's minds have become dysfunctional, look at the front cover page of any newspaper. You don't have to open it. That'll get really depressing. But just look at the cover and you go, what?
Yeah.
I mean, what? It's not just a little off. It's astonishingly awful on a daily basis.
When you talk about sort of that emotional turmoil, particularly how it relates to money and wealth, people have a lot of emotion around money. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Money and sex and God.
Yes.
That's the niche that you have been so useful in, is getting people unstuck from that.
So there are three areas around money and wealth creation and finances. And it's firstly, and I really want you to share your perspective on this first one, because it's very, very powerful, is worthiness. And I'm not good enough to have money, or I'm not worthy of money. That one is a big one for a lot of people. And it used to be me as well. That's cleared now. And it's because of RRT.
Sex, right? Let's start with sex for a moment and branch into money, because I know a little more about sex than money. But let's start with sex, in that I think as I was growing up, I'm exposed to sex in two ways. Mm-hmm. One way is that it is a very, very bad thing, other than certain circumstances, which would be if two people who are in love and are married would like to have a baby.
Yeah.
But for the most part, this is not a good thing, and it will make me have hair growing on my palms of my hands. So all of these things about how bad it is, and then all of these things about how good it is simultaneously. Right. I mean, you want to buy motor oil, they're going to find something sexy about it. Have some gorgeous gal almost naked holding up the motor oil, saying, if you have this kind of motor oil, I'm going to be all over you.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy, incredibly contradictory notions.
Yeah.
It's very important. It's very wonderful. You can't have too much of it. And everything you buy should be designed to get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sex. And by the way, you're going to go to hell and burn forever, and you're some weird perv. I think you know that about sex. I mean, that's what fun to do to our children, right? To put them in this crazy box and see if they explode. But it's not so different around money, is it? It's not so different, because it certainly is good to accumulate wealth. If I'm wealthy and other people aren't, I'm evil. Yet it's really important and I ought to do it, and then I ought to flaunt it. If you have it, you're evil. And if you have it, you're great. Is that crazy, or does that make sense?
You're absolutely right. People will tear others down for being wealthy and having a lot of money. And in the same time, all they want is that.
You want it and yet fear it.
Yeah.
And it feels complex to people and difficult and something to do with math. Let me ask you, because I want to know from you, Simone, where do the people you know who are addressing their concerns with you around these financial matters, are they stuck? And if so, how and where? And then I can tell you maybe how I think about getting them unstuck.
Yeah, great. And that really is the word. It is stuckness, and it is often overwhelm. Really, it's those two things, or it's both, or it's one of them. Where I see it the most, and where it's the most common, is the idea around worthiness of I don't deserve more money. Then the second one is there's never enough. And it does not matter if you are earning $100,000 a year, or $500,000 a year, or $50,000 a year, and you've got four kids to support. People have stuckness around there is not enough money at every income level.
These individuals feel that they specifically don't have enough money.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the third one is I can't do it because I need the instant gratification now and I'm spending too much. And all my money is gone and I have nothing left and I have to wait for my paycheck and it's so hard to save and I can never get ahead. The never getting ahead is a very, very, very common theme because, I mean, if we're honest, investing in wealth building it's slow and it doesn't give you that instant gratification euphoria hit that buying a pair of shoes does. And I think that's why a lot of people fall into get rich quick schemes because they want that instant win and they just want the money now. And then obviously all of them are scams because, of course, if everyone could get rich quick overnight, then everyone would be a billionaire. And so it feels boring and it sort of almost creates this loop of I'm stuck. I don't have enough money. That feels really boring. I'm overwhelmed. And to feel better, a lot of the times people spend money to feel better in the moment.
My goodness, you make things really clear and I understand much more than before you went through those things. Everything that you mentioned as a possible dysfunction seems like it's coming from a belief.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right there, the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there are other problems, but you can't get there with that one. You know how sometimes somebody will say, you know, I have a thought, and you say, oh, what is the thought that you have? But people say, I have a thought often if they'd like to share an idea.
Right.
When I hear somebody say, I have a thought, I think it's really good because I find it's not that the person has the belief, it's that the belief has the person.
Mm-hmm.
Think hand has the puppet.
Yeah.
Puppet doesn't have the hand. The puppet doesn't decide what the hand is going to do.
Uh-huh.
The hand is deciding, of course, what the puppet's going to do. So all of the things you mentioned were beliefs. And one of the things that would incapacitate someone from ridding themselves of a belief that isn't serving them is that most of those damaging beliefs aren't being experienced as a belief. So they don't even know it's a belief.
100%. You have hit the nail on the head.
People think more money than you need is evil. It's not, I think it might be. It's that it is. Is it? Or is that your reaction to it?
Yes.
Would 100% of people agree with you? Or might somebody look at the thing you think is so beautiful and say, I think it's stupid. Stupid? Which is it? Well, you know, you would answer by saying, well, you know, take a breath. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. That's why one person can look at the same painting and say it's hideous, and yet her husband wants to stick it in the living room. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Meaning is in the mind of the perceiver. Mm-hmm. Belief is within your mind. It's not what you're looking at, but it looks like it's what you're looking at. We are thinking that what we're reacting to is what's there, but all of us are looking through a lens that has something to do with lots of prior experiences and maybe even a genetic predisposition, but we're thinking we're seeing what's there.
Mm.
So I'll tell you what I would suggest to your listeners who are concerned about their own relationship to money.
Mm.
Sit down with a pad and write down everything you think about money. It's sacred. It's evil. Every thought about it. And if you have contradictory beliefs, there's never enough.
Mm.
or people are just too greedy.
Right.
If there are contradictory beliefs, put them both down. And then the next day, add a few more. So we've got this legal pad, and on it are all of the things that you can come up with, which are just your ideas about money. Step two, then you look at what's on your pad as a belief. A belief is something that organizes how people think, feel, and then act. But it's a belief, it's a lens, it's not the actual thing. And then pick one of them up and look at that belief. Like, give me a belief somebody might have about money, any belief.
I don't make enough money to be able to save or invest.
Let's look at that one. What's the problem, George? Oh, I'll tell you the problem. I don't make enough money to be able to save or invest.
Mm.
So is that kind of the way you think? What? Well, I mean, is that sort of how you think? What are you talking about, how I think? Do you want to know what's wrong or not? I don't make enough money to save or invest. So he's not thinking he ain't thinking he's thinking.
No, absolutely. No, he is going to die on that sword that is his reality.
Yeah, he thinks it's, well, no, he doesn't even think it's his reality.
That's good. That's true.
Bigger. Yeah. It's reality.
It's reality.
Sex is evil.
Yeah.
Or sex is wonderful, or money is wonderful, or money is evil, or,
right.
Or unfortunately, for many of us, both.
Mm-hmm.
So generally what we do with beliefs, if I offer a belief that's different than your belief, you're likely to go back and forth and say, well, if these contradict, I have to figure out which one is true.
Right.
So we look for truth. I would ask you to look for something else.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this belief, pick the top one, look at it, and not is it accurate, but is it useful? Does it serve me? Is that working out well? I don't deserve wealth, and therefore I can't get it. Is it useful? If we wanted this boy to grow up and acquire wealth, would we install that belief? You don't deserve it. So now we're looking at this belief not as whether it's true, but whether it's useful.
Right.
We can look at truth too, but there are all kinds of facts. You know, I say, so why do you believe that? Because it's a fact. Well, here's a list of hardware stores that closed in Indiana during the last 40 years. How are you telling me all these things? Well, because they really did. It's a fact. Well, I don't care about it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we don't go thinking something just because it's a fact. We think of it if it has some use.
Right.
Does you don't deserve to have wealth, is that one been working out well for you?
Mm.
Has that been serving you? I think one, find out it's actually a belief. And two, then judge it. It doesn't like that. It would rather slip inside the back of you and run you around like it's the driver and you're a car.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it and you become judgmental, which is what I would like, you look at it and judge it,
mm-hmm.
and say, what about this belief? Is this working out for me? And if the answer is no, it's not working out for me, then you are on the way to discarding it. And you don't have to prove it as untrue to discard it. You just have to prove it as irrelevant. So you're about to go scuba diving, and just before you jump out the boat, I hand you a toaster oven. And you say, John, you know, I'm about to dive. Why are you giving me this toaster oven? This is the best one they make. Honey, I'm sure it's lovely, but I'm not going to pick it up because it's not going to help me in my swimming.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you amuse yourself with it? Because here I go into the water. You don't pick it up because it's actual or because it's true. You pick it up because it's useful. Write the beliefs down on that piece of paper and then judge them based on their value for you. Are they serving you? If it's not serving you, look at this thing and say, it doesn't serve me, therefore it's useless. You've ordered a bowl of soup and the waiter comes over and hands you an axe. And you say, yeah, it's not going to be too helpful with this soup situation. And so you just put it down. You don't try to, is it really an axe? Is it a good axe? It's just not useful. Get rid of it. So this idea that I don't deserve it, is it useful? Get rid of it. Now, sometimes somebody will get that far, Simone, and then say, I totally get that it's not useful, but it still has me.
Yeah, right.
And then that means if you totally get that it's not useful, but it still has you, the problem isn't any longer just intellectual. It's not just cognitive. There, we want to clear things from where the issue is happening, which is likely to be from data that came in from a prior experience that's continuing to have this negative effect. And that gets a bit complex, and it's often best to do it with somebody else who knows what they're doing and is caring and isn't you.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I'm confused by a bunch of stuff, the reason I'm going to call you, Simone, is you're beautiful and you're smart. And better than that, you're not me.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea said plenty of time within me. And in here, and it's got me. And then I lay it out. I go into your office and you say, put it on the blackboard or put it on the whiteboard or put it out there. Let's look at it together. Wow, I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with somebody who cares and has clarity. When you have met these people, Simone, who tell you, I don't deserve wealth, is it different between different sexes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite prevalent with women.
How did it get there? How did that belief that she doesn't deserve to have any wealth, she doesn't even know that's a belief.
Yeah.
I don't deserve wealth. And I'm a woman. And I'm 5'6". Right. So it's like something about her.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
It's part of her, yeah.
But it isn't.
Absolutely.
But it's experienced as if it is. And if it continues to be experienced as if it is, what can you do for her? Get her to stop experiencing it as if it is.
Mm-hmm.
And or nothing. So you got to extract that as a belief. How the heck did that damn thing get into her?
There's a big history of societally and literally practically, which did happen, where men invested and women stayed at home. That's our history in the 50s. And women had no place to create wealth, to make her own money, let alone to invest.
Well, yeah, men worked.
Right.
They didn't just invest, they worked.
Yeah.
Women did housework.
Yes. Right. That
they didn't get paid for.
Right. Free labor, yeah.
And guys went out to work and they did get paid. Did that cause women to feel kind of like they shouldn't ought to have money? One power you've got as you talk to this gal and she says, I don't deserve wealth, is, well, let's look at that thing together.
Mm.
does it serve you? Would you want to have that belief stuck inside this 13-year-old girl permanently?
Mm.
Oh, no, I wouldn't want that for her.
Mm.
Ah, so you don't think it's particularly good for people, but it's been stuck within you. What's another one? What's another one of these beliefs that are in the way?
Well, there's never enough, even if I
help me with that one. What do you mean?
Well, I don't have enough money to go around. Like, I can't do all the things I want to do. I want to do all these other things, but I only make this much money and I don't have a business and I'm stuck in my salary.
Tell me why that's not realistic. I mean, why wouldn't you just say, well, yeah, you don't make enough money and you can't do those things? Where do you disagree?
Where I disagree is other people do different things with the same amount of money.
Oh, wow. No, really? Wow. That's perfect. Reality check. What could somebody else do with that amount of money? And, well, what could somebody else with similar situation, number of people, what have you, place, do? And then you see the difference, huh? When she's saying it's not enough, do you kind of see somebody else with the same amount feeling like it is enough to operate from?
Yes and no. There is a degree of a base amount of money. I mean, you can't live on 10 cents a day.
But when you said it's a belief that doesn't serve people.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not somebody who's only got 10 cents.
No.
And you very astutely told me that you can tell by comparing it to what somebody else might be doing with the same amount. And you have enough knowledge of how different people deal with different amounts that you're sort of an expert in that. Mm. And you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see right there that what she's thinking of as reality is indeed a belief.
Right.
And I see what that's beautiful, the way you figure that out. Can she get it that it's a belief? And then can it be gotten rid of? But you initially deal with some anger, and anger is a response to perceived threat. You saying that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
It threatens her. But you manage to have people hanging on every word you say, dear. I know that. And there are breakthroughs. What you do really well, and you probably couldn't even tell it to me because it's become so sort of habitual for you.
Yeah.
That you don't have it really broken down.
Mm.
Kind of like if I said to you, you know, how do you pronounce hippopotamus? You say hippopotamus. And I say, no, that I want to know how you do that. Like, where did you move your tongue?
Yeah.
And what did you do with your vocal cords?
Right.
Tell me how to pronounce it.
Mm.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I just say it. You have this magic. And I don't even know whether you know how the trick is done. But I sure as hell know you know how to do the trick.
Well, here's the thing. I have all of the practical tools and the strategy to create wealth, to get really good at money. Where the stuckness occurs is I can't do it, or I'm not motivated to.
Oh, I do have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, we hear people talk about motivation, their own and others.
Yeah.
As if it's kind of like a trait that comes with goodness. I really enjoy working with little Brian because he's so motivated. Unlike his sister, she doesn't have any motivation. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to it, it's like, you know, somebody dumped a bunch of him into him when he was on the assembly line. And whatever, that guy apparently had a bathroom break when she was going by. They didn't scoop any of that into her. And I know people don't think of it that way, but they do think of, you know, I have motivation. She doesn't have motivation. I don't have motivation. We lack motivation. Where do we get motivation? The truth, my friend, is that they have done thousands of autopsies looking to determine the cause of death, but they carved these people all up. They've never found any motivation. It doesn't exist. It's not inside anybody. It's not a thing. If your beautiful mind brings to your attention something that would be good to have done, like it will be good to have done that exercise. If your mind brings to your attention, this would be good to have done, and it's something that would be possible to do, I could do that exercise. It would be good to have done it. I could do it. Then I'd want your mind to attach interest. Then I'd want your mind to attach pleasure. You know, I'd really like to do that. It's so interesting to do that. It makes me happy just to think about doing that. Well, could you do it? Yeah, I can do it. Well, would it be good for you? I'd be great for me. I'd feel so good later if I did it. Then you're going to do it. I mean, you're absolutely going to do it. But it's not because of something that was in you called motivation. It's because of all those things, the way mind operationalize. That's something that using the processes I use, I cause it. Mm-hmm. I don't say, well, he had it and he didn't have it. It's caused.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where it can go wrong. Sometimes people's minds attach interest to things that are possible and then attach appeal. So it's interesting, it's appealing, it looks like it would feel really good, but it's actually something that would be bad to have done. But there are a bunch of people doing things that are kind of bad to have done, you know? fentanyl, unprotected sex with a stranger. Oh, that sounds great. Well, if you stop the movie in the middle of it, it's pretty damn good. If you play that movie out a little bit, it's like, oh my God, what thing is this that just is poking out of my body? Oh, well, there are two pokes, actually. One is the baby, the other is the disease. Congratulations. You know? So some people, what we got to do is stop their minds from attaching appeal to what will be bad to have done. And I meet with a lot of people. The one guy, he was looking to become free from doing heroin. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't done heroin in a few days. And as he was talking to me, he described it as my love affair with heroin.
Right.
And I said, wow, so you love it? And he said, yeah. And I said, tell me about it. Oh, man. It's like, and he's going into it. And I said, could we end a little early? And he said, sure, dude, but are you okay, doc? And I said, yeah, well, yeah, it's just like, you know, that was amazing. I want to go find it. He said, you need to find what? I said, heroin. He said, what? I said, oh, just sitting here noticing your love and how amazing it is. I want to get some too. And he says, set your ass back down. I said, what's the problem? He said, it isn't good to have done it. That's why I'm sitting here and looking at your ugly face, because it's not good to have done it. And so that's something we adjust in people's minds. Will it be good to have done it? And if it's not, we want the not good to have done it to leak into the doing it. So somebody has this limitation on the amount of money and they think, wouldn't it be good to go out for this very expensive dinner and pick up other people's checks while I'm there? Well, will it be good to have done that the next morning? Will it be good to realize the money went way down? Oh, no. So we want to get it like that. But the other thing is, we would like somebody's mind to attach interest and appeal to what will be good to have done. People who are depressed, they're feeling like, it's not that I couldn't do anything. It's just I couldn't do anything that would be worth doing. I can do these things, but that wouldn't make me feel any better. Mm-hmm. But this would make me feel better, but I can't have that. That's not actually reality. It's the lens that I have to, then it becomes my job to clean off the lens so the guy's seeing accurately and his mind works. And there are things we can do to change the way the mind works from inside out. It's effortless.
Yes.
It's just, it's not well known that that can be done. But that's what I do all day long, is change the way people's minds are working so that change happens effortlessly. Mm-hmm. And they just say, wow, yeah, I just really didn't feel like it wanted to eat some donuts in the middle of the night. I just didn't feel like it. And I did feel like going to the gym when I woke up.
Right.
I felt like it. And the way most people view that, my friend, is they view it moralistically. I'm a bad person mm-hmm. because I don't want to. She's really good because she's motivated. And it feels like it's about the person.
Absolutely.
It's just about the way the thing is adjusted. And that's what I'm good at adjusting. And that's what you're also good at adjusting. There is an open group I have every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. It's called Solutions. People just share all kinds of things they've been struggling with, and we find solutions.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it's free. I would love to have some of your listeners join us there. And the way to do that, the website is rapidresolutiontherapy.com. If you go to that, just look for Solutions, probably right there on the homepage, and register and show up and raise your hand and tell me that you're a gift from Simone. And we have all kinds of other ways that we can tweak and make mm-hmm. things better for people. It's all there on the website, and we're happy to talk with you and see how this thing can fit into your life to get unstuck.
And I'll link that in the show notes as well. I highly, highly recommend it. I've had the privilege of you work with me on a couple of things, and sometimes they're literally, it's 15 minutes. And, you know, it's cleared. You did a clearing, I think it was about 10 minutes on a solutions call one night. I don't know if you remember, about I couldn't get pregnant for almost 4 years, and you did a clearing.
Simone, did I get you pregnant?
Yeah.
A blush finally from you. Yes.
The next month I was pregnant.
How did we get it unstuck?
I was upset. I wasn't in trauma about it. I was just like, look, it's been 4 years. We've been doing IVF. It's just not working. You made it okay for me to not ever be pregnant and not ever have a baby. It's like, well, I don't want that. But actually that was the thing that released the, and I didn't really even know that much pressure and tension but the difference in really everything, my emotional state, my physiological state, just my energy and beingness around just enjoying life and being okay.
Now you made me blush, damn it.
I'm so glad that I was first introduced to RRT and got to know you. And then now that I became certified in it, I use RRT in conjunction with practical stuff of how to manage money and how to build wealth.
What an amazing combination. You know, sweetie, you are a high achiever and you've learned the value of focus and effort. And yet there are lots of things that we do better without any effort.
Yeah. You know, obviously a lot of the RRT methods are invisible. It's a process of working on the unconscious mind without you really kind of knowing, which is so fun, like you said. It's so different to talk therapy and a lot of other things. Thank you for coming on, John. I really value you and everything that you teach is perfect.
Thank you. You're the most reassuring, lovely person. I mean, if anybody's nervous, can't stay nervous for long with you because you're just so kind and supportive. Time goes fast when you're having fun, huh? Yes. It feels like I've been talking to you almost 15 minutes.
Thanks, John. I appreciate
you. Take care, sweetie.
Bye.
If you're not part of the Ms. Wealthy movement yet, make sure you head over to Instagram and hang out with me there. I am at Ms. Wealthy Official. And if you need anything else, head to mswealthy.com and you can get all the info that you need. Find us on Facebook as well. And hey, I'd also love if you can drop a review on iTunes. It supports us massively and it means the freaking world.